Hi, and welcome back to Dr. YOLO. You only live once, so why not make it count and live your best life? Hear from experts in their field on our health and wellness podcast. We will be discussing tips to living your one and only best life. This podcast is brought to you by Topline MD, a health alliance of top quality docs with a mission to elevate the patient experience. I'm your host, Dr. Geethan Ayer. Today joining me on this podcast is Dr. Mark Grenitz. He is a board-certified gynecologist practicing in Plantation, Florida. He earned his medical degree at the University of Miami, and he completed his residency at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City. Dr. Grenitz, welcome.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
So we're going to be talking about birth control and specifically cervical cancer. I mean, you know this better than us. A lot of women are very confused about the pill, very confused about whether there's a relationship with cervical cancer. Maybe you can just start off with telling us what cervical cancer actually is.
So cervical cancer occurs when cells on the uterine cervix, which is the entrance to the womb, change and become cancerous. And the overwhelming majority of cases of cervical cancer are caused by a virus called human papillomavirus. There are hundreds of strains of this virus, but only 14 of them are associated with an increased risk of cancers and precancers of the cervix.
So human papillomavirus, that's a mouthful. I think that's, you know, commonly HPV, right?
HPV, right.
Got it. So to vaccinate, not to vaccinate, what's your take on this?
So like many vaccines, the human papillomavirus or HPV vaccine contains no active infectious material. It just is proteins from the surface of the virus, so it cannot cause a disease. It causes your body to react and recognize the virus as foreign, enabling you to attack the virus and prevent an infection. So vaccination is by far the best way to prevent many diseases, including cervical cancer.
Dr. Grenitz, you sound like a doctor.
Sorry.
So
it's an occupational hazard.
It sure is. It sure is. Well, you know, thinking about to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, I guess the question really is how common is it for women to get affected by cervical cancer? I think we'd probably start with that before anything else.
So cervical cancer is very rare, but precancers are actually fairly common. Fortunately, we have pap smears, and those detect the precancers before they become cancer and give us the opportunity to cure them.
So a lot of controversy around pap smears, as you know, every year, every other year, every 5 years. What's your stance on that, Doc?
The modern pap smear is highly effective, does not have a significant risk of missing a problem, and therefore doesn't have to be done every year. As women get older, their chances of having persistent activity of the HPV declines. So women over 30 can add a routine HPV screening to their pap smear. And the current recommendation is to do a pap smear with an HPV if you're over 30 every 3 to 5 years.
Wow, so 30 is old? Is that the cutoff?
30 is mature.
Good to know, good to know. I'm immature for anyone wondering. So who is at risk? Who is fundamentally at risk for cervical cancer?
So every woman who is sexually active is at some risk for developing cervical precancers or cancers, but routine screening prevents cancer.
Okay, gotcha. So where does birth control fit into this, right? There's a lot of folks that are asking, you know, does birth control actually increase the risk for cervical cancer? And if so, how does that work?
So the chances of cervical cancer do increase in birth control users, birth control pill users, by about, this is a crazy number, 7 women out of 10,000. So if 10,000 women take the pill, 7 more of them will get a cervical cancer than 10,000 women who don't take the pill.
Wow.
That's an extremely small number. If those women have routine screening, they do not get cancer.
So there's all kinds of different birth control pills. There's estrogen, there's progesterone, there's this, there's that. How do women out there know what pill to take and what's the difference?
So deciding what pill to take is in some ways a bit of a experimental process. There's no real good formula for saying, oh, you're this size and this height and this weight and you're this age and we should use this pill.
But you're the doctor. You know everything.
I know how to guess well. So there are differences between the pills that are small. So depending on a patient's previous experience with the pill, her sensitivity to other things that we might be able to ask them about, we can generally pick a direction. There is some data that suggests that pills that have more estrogen may increase the risk a little bit more than pills that contain little or no estrogen. And that pills that change the dose each week or 5 days, which are known as triphasic pills, may also increase the risk a little bit more. But it's very important to note that these numbers are all very tiny in the vast scheme of risk, and routine screening basically makes it unimportant to the average woman.
So I know we're talking a lot about the pill with an assumption that everyone should be on the pill and that it's in the water. We know that's not the case, even though the water is beautiful here in Miami. Is there are there other forms of birth control that women should opt for, specifically if they're worried about cervical cancer?
So non-hormonal contraceptives would not have this effect. The belief, although it's not proven, is that the hormones in some way allow the human papillomavirus or HPV to have a greater effect on you. It's very important that people know that within 10 years after you stop using the pill, your risk goes back to what it would be if you never used the pill. And that doesn't matter how long you took the pill. If you took it for 25 years, in 10 years, the risk is gone. So it's not a lifetime risk. So non-hormonal contraceptives like the Paragard intrauterine device or condoms or the contraceptive sponge, those all would not increase the risk. And in some ways, they might decrease the risk, especially the barrier type methods like condoms would prevent some of the exposure to HPV.
Now, HPV is a sexually transmitted disease, correct?
Yes, it is.
So all the same precautions you would take to prevent an STD, which would be?
Barrier contraceptives, long-term relationships.
So this is something that even men need to think about.
Absolutely. And men should get vaccinated for HPV as well.
And what age? When are they mature? When will that happen, Dr. Granitz? When? Give me an age.
I'm not an expert on men, so I can't say when they'll mature. But
that'll be the magic number, whatever it is.
But the best age to vaccinate for both boys and girls is around age 11.
Wow, really? That
so,
early?
Yes, the current anti-HPV vaccine is a two-dose vaccine if you get it when you're around 11. If you wait until you're over 12, it's a three-dose vaccine in order to produce the same effect. So you get to avoid a dose if you start young. For that reason, it's falling on the pediatricians to do this vaccination, as with most of the other vaccinations that are done in childhood.
Makes sense. And what's the name of the vaccine that we need to ask folks out there to ask for or you know, talk to their doc about?
It's called Gardasil 9 because it contains proteins from 9 types of HPV, 7 of the cancer-causing strains, and 2 that cause genital warts, which is another whole basket of fun that HPV can cause.
There you go, sounding like a doctor again. Dr.
Sorry.
Well, wonderful. So the bottom line is, given the numbers, given everything that we talked about, do you recommend that women stay away from the pill because of this increased risk? I mean, you just talked about other barrier methods and, you know, other ways to prevent against this.
So I think before we conclude that, we should talk about the benefits of the pill. So besides a very reliable way to prevent pregnancy, birth control pills also reduce the risk of ovarian cancer, endometrial, which is uterine lining cancer, and colon cancer. A woman who takes birth control pills for 7 to 10 years cuts her ovarian cancer risk in half for the rest of her life. And a woman who takes birth control pills cuts her risk of uterine lining cancer by more than 90% while she's on it. And then after she's off it, it remains at a 50% reduction for the rest of her life. Those numbers are gigantic in comparison to the risk of cervical cancer, especially in women who have routine screening. So overwhelmingly, the benefits of birth control pills outweigh this risk and all the other risks.
Wow, I don't think a lot of folks know that. That was helpful.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Granitz, we ask everyone who comes on the podcast how they are living their best life. Share with us how you do it every day as you in Plantation, Florida. What does that look like?
Wow. I guess a lot of people talk about work-life balance. I think that I'm very fortunate. Been married for a long time. My wife is my best friend, and we spend at least a good few hours every day just being together, hanging out. That's how I'm living my best life.
That's wonderful. We're going to give a shout out to Anne, who we all know and love, and what a great answer to say that's how He's living his best life. Dr. Grenes, thank you so much for being our guest expert. It's been a pleasure to have you on our show. We look forward to practicing these important life strategies so we can live up to this idea of YOLO. And thank you to our listeners. We have so much more coming to you, from myths about trending diets to tons of important health topics with top doctors. Subscribe to our channel and tune in so that you too can start living your best life.